Well, good morning and happy feast, brethren. I'd like to thank the children for the choir that sang in the choir and the parents that worked with them. I think there's nothing more joyous than to see children singing praises to our great God. And so it's something we can all rejoice in. I'd also thank Mr. Josephic for his message. According to his calculation, during this 1,000-year period, he was about 46 years remaining with his message. So my guess is that now there's about 40 years of wondering. So when I finish, you're going to wonder what happened for the last 40 years. Brethren, have you ever woken up in the morning and had a new ache or a pain? How can we get injuries just from sleeping? Our human body is absolutely amazing. It's continual communication with our body. And it's incredibly complicated, something for our minds to understand what's going on sometimes with our own bodies. Each part has a specific purpose, designed perfectly to work together in unity, but different in the functions. And God's church is no different. So start off this morning, we're going to look at 1 Corinthians 12, and I'll have the scriptures up here so we can all read them. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 12. And it's no wonder God uses the analogy of the human body to describe his church. First Corinthians 12, starting in verse 12. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into that one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. Skipping down to verse 18. But now God has set members, each one of them, in the body just as he pleased. Hear everything done to glorify God as he directs. Everyone's placed where he wants them, according to his direction. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. Well, hopefully these past 7 days during this feast, we've had a chance to meet various members we've never met before, various parts of the body of Christ we've never met before here in Oceanside. All diverse, but unified. Well, just before the Feast of or Day of Atonement, my good friend Dr. Bruce Suckling and I had the opportunity to travel to Malawi to spend the time with the brethren there from Atonement up through the beginning of the Feast of Tabernacles. And we returned back to the feast this past Wednesday to be with our families. So this morning, I would like to share the Feast of Tabernacles Malawian style. In doing this, I hope we can gain a better understanding and a better appreciation for the body of Christ described in 1 Corinthians 12. This body will one day be together, working together in God's kingdom. So first of all, let's give you a little background on Malawi. Malawi is a tiny country. It's about a third of the size of California, and it's bordered by Mozambique, Zambia, and Tanzania in the southern part of Africa. Other than Lake Malawi itself, which is one of the largest natural bodies of water, or freshwater bodies, other than that, there's really no natural resources in Malawi itself. There's really not much there. Many, the Dutch, the British, all had gone in at one time. No one really colonized it because there was nothing there to have, and they all left. But Malawi's population is about 19 million people, and it's one of the poorest countries on the earth, if not the poorest country on earth. So out of 19 million people, about three-fourths of that population, so roughly 15 million of the 19 million people that live in Malawi, earn less than $1 per day. Probably have spent more in the last couple days than most people in Malawi will see in a year, maybe even in a lifetime. As such, the government and the police officials are very corrupt. Corruption is rampant throughout society there. Currently, you would call Malawi a Christian nation. And I say currently because Islam is on a steep rise in Malawi. Islam has a great way of converting people. What they do is they go into countries like Malawi that are extremely poor, and they will actually pay you to convert. The head of a household gets roughly $1,500 to convert to Islam. In a country that makes average person less than $1 a day, imagine the temptation. And then as the head of household, for every member you bring into the family, or to, of your family that you bring into Islam, they'll give you an additional $1,000. And so they're paying to convert this country from a Christian country to an Islamic country. The unemployment rate in Malawi officially is 5.9%. You talk to anyone that lives there, and they say realistically it's probably 59%. It's well over 50% of the population. And in private industry, you're required to work Monday to Saturday. So any of our brethren working in private industry, the Sabbath is a major, major challenge for them. And if they say they're not going to work Saturday, the employer is like, okay, there's 1,000 people behind you that are willing to. So it becomes a very big trial for our brethren in Malawi. But even with the severe poverty, with the corrupt government, and with the extreme unemployment, God has called people to his family to be part of his body in Malawi, diverse and unified. We currently have two main congregations in Malawi that meet weekly in Lilongwe and Blantyre, and we have members spread throughout the entire country, up to the north, all the way up to Mzuzu. We have members up there, and then, as I said, spread throughout the country. How did the feast take shape this year in Malawi? There was actually two feast sites. There was one in Blantyre that met in the city and in their church hall there. But there's another feast site that took place. How did it take place? How did it take shape? Well, just after the spring holy days, the church in Malawi, they were looking to buy some land, some farm ground. And the reason they wanted to buy this was they wanted to teach biblical principles in a way that Malawians would understand. They found an abandoned groundnut or a peanut farm on the western side of Malawi there, and they checked into buying it. So what would make the membership think that buying farm ground is a way to teach biblical principles to the members there? This all started with a man named Phileas Jerry. The inspiration came from Phileas. Phileas and his wife, Klosawi, they live just across the Malawian border in Zambia, in Chapada. And Phileas was just ordained an elder into the church just at the Feast of Trumpets this year. So what's his story, and how did he inspire a true Malawian feast with godly principles? Several years ago in Zambia, they were going through a severe food shortage. And the church had sent money to Zambia to help members buy food. Knowing that when the food was gone, with the money they had and the money was gone, they would still be in the same situation, no improvements at all. So Phileas decided to take some of the money and buy food for the immediate needs of the members. And he took the rest of the money and he bought a small plot of land. And he told the members he would teach them how to grow food and to provide for themselves. And through God's blessing and various conservation farming techniques, which involved organic composting, this land has flourished. The farm is absolutely incredible. He taught the youth how to work hard. He taught them how to provide. But he also insisted on one thing. He insisted they follow godly principles regarding tithing. He said, you must give back to God what is due to him, what is his. And tithing is something that is extremely difficult in countries like this when you don't know where your next meal is coming from. This was the first real example of the fruits when this is the tithe that was given from the membership to the church for their first tithes. They started tithing on the increase that God had blessed them with. And it was a huge thing. The Malawian and even the Zambian mindset is that if you need money, you just go to a church or to an NGO and you just ask them for money. They use this system, and that's the mindset. And Phileas wanted to change that mindset. The church in Chapada, Zambia, has basically become self-sufficient. They've had enough first tithes that they bought airtime on a local radio station. And what Phileas would do is he would take the Beyond Today programs, he would translate them into Chichua, and then broadcast them out on the local radio station, and their small flock began to flourish. Well, Brennan and Mikla Hilgen had seen this example when their visits to Chapada had met with Filius, and he explained how this process worked. And so they established a goal of assisting Malawians to become self-sufficient, allowing Malawians to be Malawians. So they went back to Malawi, and they were able to purchase an 8-acre parcel of land, this farm ground. It's in Nkwazi, Malawi, which is right close to the border of Zambia. The short man in the middle is the local chief. And just by looking at him, you can tell how rough life is there. Any guesses on his age? And I won't ask, make you guess. But the little man in the middle is roughly between 30 and 35 years old. He looked like he personally knew Moses when I met him. The man looks ancient, and he's about 30 to 35 years old. But the local chiefs are really important in these villages because what they say goes. And if he said, you can't sell this land, or told the church we could not buy it, it wouldn't happen. So what they did is they talked to the local chief and they explained to him why they wanted the land. They said, we want it for a feast site. We want it for our youth camps. We want it for an education center and a farm. And the chief thought that was a fantastic idea, and he blessed it, and the land purchase went through. This was the official contract. The closing took about 30 seconds. But the way I understand this contract reads, it basically says, the United Church of God has purchased this ground on May 21st, 2018. And when you read the instructions, it says this land is bordered by this walking path that goes down to this bush, which goes over to this tree, follows this other walking path, and somehow that's your land. But most importantly, what it says is the chief's approved it. That's the most important thing on this document. The chief has approved it. Well, the brethren there in the Longwe were told about the plans for the feast. And they're also told they had a couple requirements to attend the feast this year. They needed to arrange transport to and from the feast, and they needed to bring their own food. And they also were told that festival assistance would be available for those who needed it. With that, the work really began. They started work parties every single Sunday and sometimes during the week for the past 4 months to prepare this land for the feast. The Longwe congregation continually was out there week after week after week, first clearing the land, digging it up, digging up the old plants, going through and foraging the ground nuts, which are the peanuts. They actually had a whole basket of old peanuts that they ground up or had dug up and found. So they cleared all the land and then went through and we would consider slash and burn, and brought everything into piles so they could clear the land. And that's a common way in Malawi, is to burn. The whole country seems like it's on fire sometimes because they burn pretty much everything. So they were burning the piles, and it got a little smoky at times. They actually had to go through and make sure everybody was accounted for. And once they did, they decided to break for lunch and joined lunch in a non-smoky area back at one of the members close to their house there. But what happened during this experience, when the whole congregation came together to work in this feast site, was the bonding and unity that took place. And it's been absolutely amazing, because they all had a common goal, and they had a purpose. The purpose wasn't to go and request money from the home office or from other members. The purpose was to be able to do this themselves, to be able to do it Malawian style. This wasn't going to be an American feast site in Malawi, as it's been the last 30, 35, 40 years. We've been in a nice hotel that a few visitors can come and stay in, and the majority of the members stay elsewhere. Instead, this would be a Feast of Tabernacle site, Malawian style. They worked on it on a bathhouse after they cleared the land, and also they had a water well, I think through the blessing of Life Nets, to help supply them with a water well out there. The bathhouse is a term I will use loosely because it consisted of that brick building there, which is a room about, they had multiple rooms, but it's about the size of this lectern that you stand inside with your bucket of water and you take your bath. There's no running water, there's no electricity, but this is a fantastic blessing. They absolutely love it. But one of the other challenges for the brethren in Malawi that they faced face is the language. While Malawi has two official languages, English and Chichua, some of the brethren only speak Chichua. And many of the brethren that speak English don't really have a great concept of the English language. Even though they can speak it, the concept sometimes they miss. And all of our hymns, all of our literature, everything we are using in Malawi was in English. And so making this connection with the brethren, there were some things that were lacking. And so they've been working to translate the hymnal. Currently, we have about 27 hymns converted into Chichua. And now it's a requirement. Every church service, the first two hymns are sung in the Chichua language. And let me tell you, they can belt that out like no one's business. No microphones needed. They love it, absolutely love it. And then they'll switch to English and sing the other ones. But the fact is, they could sing in Chichua, sing praises to God by understanding the words, understanding what they're saying. It has so much more meaning to them. Also, they've converted the fundamental beliefs of the United Church of God into the Chichua language. And this booklet is going out to print. I'm not sure if they have printed copies right now, but what they're doing during the feast this year, they're actually going through this booklet in Chichua and explaining the fundamental beliefs, and this is exactly what God says and why we do what we do. So with all this preparation, they were ready for the Feast of Tabernacles 2018 Malawian style. This year, the festival request, there was something that amazingly happened. In previous feasts, for the last, like I said, 30, 40 years, 100% of the members had requested festival assistance to be able to attend the feast site. This year, there were only 3 members that needed festival assistance to attend the feast site. There was a couple widows that needed some assistance to get to the site. Other than that, everyone was able to save their tithes, was able to be able to attend the feast on their own. It was an amazing change from previous years. As I mentioned, the feast site is in Ninkwazi, Malawi, which is real close to the Zambian border. It's about maybe 15 minutes from Chapada, from that area in Zambia. And this year, there were 2 members that came over from Zambia to the feast site there in Malawi. The majority of the members in Chapada, where Phileas is the elder that takes care of that congregation there, they'd already made arrangements to go take the 10-hour bus ride to Lusaka for the feast. But the plan is next year that the Zambian brethren will all attend here in Malawi with the Malawian brethren. Both of them speak a common language, that being Chichua. And so they're really looking forward to the feast of 2019 where they can all meet together as one family. When you get to the feast site, this is the tabernacles. It's the first thing you see when you walk into, or when you arrive there at the feast site. It's a quite large structure. It's about 20 meters by 30 meters, or 60 by 100 feet, roughly. Made entirely out of sticks and bamboo with this African mud flooring. And I'll show you a picture of the African mud a little bit later. The church members had gone and purchased all this bamboo and did work parties and built these bamboo mats. And they took all the bamboo mats and then shipped it out to the feast site where they actually had employed some local villagers to erect this structure. The entire cost of the building was $180. It was $150 for the material that they purchased, and it cost $30 to get this thing built. When you walk inside the building, you immediately recognize this as a place where God placed his name during the feast. And I was sitting there doing the opening night message on Sunday night, and I kept looking at this sign, and finally I just started laughing. And I leaned over at Mikola, and I said, after 52 years, this is the first time I'm going to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. So, it just added to the feeling that this was the Feast of Tabernacles, Malawian style. Then I got to see my accommodations. This was my booth for the feast. Apparently the front office didn't get my request for a pool or ocean view. But it was actually a quite nice booth My travel partner, Bruce's first comment was, he said, "Scott," he goes, "that doesn't look snake-proof, spider-proof, or rhino-proof." And I assured him bamboo was really strong. But we had to lay on, got to lay on mats in this floor with mosquito nets, even though mosquito nets weren't really required that time of year, because as you can tell from the picture, it's the dry season, and we didn't see any mosquitoes the entire time. But my daughter had asked me when I was coming out if I wanted to stay in a booth that they would have built or a tent. And I said, "The booth sounds fantastic." And she goes, "Well, you have to pay for it." And I said, "Okay." I said, "How much does a booth for the entire feast cost?" And she said, $20. I said, "All right, done." So that's what $20 will get you at the feast in Malawi. Some of the members wanted booths, and others wanted tents. They felt more comfortable sleeping in tents. This lady, Ketty, she had actually, her and her husband was sleeping in one of the tents, and so she decided she wanted an African mud floor to put her tent on. What it is, it's like a clay that they have, and they put water on it and spread it out. Within a matter of about 3 hours, it dries like cement. And so that's what she's making right now, as African mud floor, and then she's going to move her tent over there for the rest of the feast. Well, the African Malawian booth city here, it composed of about, we had about 10 of the bamboo booths and probably about 15 tents. But as you can see, we actually have plenty of room where next year with the brethren in Zambia, this will be 2 to 3 times what we see here today. The members also erected a windbreak for the kitchen, because there's a constant wind blowing out there. It's a very hot, dusty wind, and so they wanted to protect the fires so they didn't get out of control. But you can see we had enough fire and charcoal to last a lifetime, you would think. One of the things that the members love to do is play netball and soccer, and partly because it costs very little to next to nothing to play. You need a few sticks to make you a goal, a little round thing to make you a hoop, and a ball. Pretty much that's all you need, and they love this. But one of the ways you can tell whether a netball or a soccer game is going on, you'll see a huge cloud of dust, then you'll see a ball pop out of it, and then you'll see this huge cloud of dust, and then you'll see the ball pop out of it again. It looked like an incredible dust storm, but the brethren absolutely love it. One of the things I mentioned was they were required to bring their own food throughout the feast, you know, even though we had several group meals in the holy days and the Sabbath. But everyone brought nsima, which is it's a traditional Malawian food. It's basically like cornmeal that's been grounded up. And it looks like a very solid batch of mashed potatoes. It tastes like absolutely nothing. There's no flavor to it. And it sets up in your stomach like cement. The Malawian and Zambian brethren love it. They absolutely love it because it makes them feel full. The nutritional value, I'm guessing, is next to nothing. But everyone brings nsima. That's a staple out there. And then for those members that had extra second tithe, they were able to purchase some meat. This man, Fraser, had bought these two chickens, and that's the chief behind him. He bought the two chickens from the chief. And he was as proud as could be with these two chickens. He walked around for no more, at least an hour, carrying these two chickens around the feast grounds, just walking back and forth. And my buddy Bruce is like, "What is he doing?" And I said, I'm guessing his wife Jessie's getting the fire going. I said, "I have no idea," because he was so happy to have these chickens. But we also had, for the first time ever, we were able to purchase a cow for the feast to have beef. This is something the brethren rarely have. We have chickens and they have goats periodically, and we've done that at the feast many times. They had goats where they've slaughtered. And so we had a cow there to have beef. And so I announced this on the opening day, the holy day, that after sundown, we were gonna have some guys come out and they were gonna slaughter the cow, and then everyone would share in the blessing, and they would divvy up the meat based upon the size of the family, that everyone could have fresh beef throughout the feast. And I was talking to this guy, Francis, after services, and I said, "What do you think about having beef during the feast?" And his comment was, "I'm still talking to my saliva." And I thought about that for a minute, and what I realized what he was saying was, my mouth is watering. So if your mouth is watering, you just talk to your saliva. I think it's one and the same. So after sundown on the holy day, then some guys came from the village and they butchered the cow and spent most of the night doing that. And I was kind of glad I left before they actually served it. It wasn't exactly what I was thinking, but what I understand was absolutely fantastic. The beef was absolutely wonderful. One of the other things that they did in establishing this feast site was they planted various greens for the members that didn't have much. So they did this a month or so before the feast, and they called this their subsistence farm. And by the time the feast came around, the subsistence farm was ready. And so the idea was that the members who didn't have anything else to go with their nsema, they'd be able to go down, pick some fresh greens, and every day of the feast, they could have fresh greens straight from the garden that they would wash and they'd have as part of their meal. Nobody needed to sign up for it. Nobody needed to ask. If you needed some food, it was right there, and you could go get it. During the holy days and Sabbath, as I mentioned, we had group meals, and it was amazing watching the brethren just sit around for hours, eating, laughing, talking, just having a fantastic time. Well, now I'd like to introduce you to some of the members, because I think it's important that we understand this part of God's body. Our brothers and sisters, they supplement us just as we supplement them, but all serving the head of the body, Jesus Christ. So this is Mrs. Chandi. The name may be familiar to some people who've been around for a while. She's the wife of the original pastor in Malawi going back to the 1970s. Has been an absolute stable force in the congregation for years, stable pillar. And she wasn't able to go out to the feast in Nkwazi. She actually went to Blantyre. That's where her children live, and so she had the feast there. But Mrs. Chandi is one that you'll always see. She can't walk much, so she was usually in services. She'll be sitting there, and so people have to go up and talk to her just for her physical capabilities. She can't get around, but is an absolutely wonderful servant of God. Haitan Tungala, he's one of the deacons and longtime members in the church. He started attending in the late 70s, and he has helped to stabilize the church through various splits, through various issues they've had over the years. One thing about Haitan is he suffers from extreme asthma. Sometimes he'll get these asthma attacks, and the cure they've given him was he'll lay there with a straw, and he'll lay down and breathe through a straw for hours, if not a days on end, until the asthma attack goes away. But an absolute wonderful servant. Cephas and Patricia Chapamba. This is another deacon we have in the church, and his wife there, Patricia. They have four children. They live just about 10 minutes away from where we met for the feast site. The interesting thing about Cephas was years ago, he was actually in line to be the chief of his local village, and he surpassed that. What he said was, I want to go to medical school. I want to go study to be a doctor so I can help the brethren that way, help my brothers and sisters I live with. I can help them by being a doctor. There's no doctors in this whole area. And so he gave up the opportunity to be the chief because he wanted to be a doctor to help. And Cephas and Patricia operate a medical clinic there, not far from where the feast site is. One of the things they specialize in and tried to convince my buddy Bruce is they actually specialize in voluntary male circumcisions. And so I was not a willing participant, neither was Bruce, but Cephas does serve that need and as well, as I said, takes care of people from Zambia, Mozambique, and Malawi. Nestor Piri, Nestor is a deaconess and she's well respected in the church. She's been a longtime faithful member, continually has that smile. It's probably the second picture, you probably recognize her from the previous one. Always has that smile and is just an absolute wonderful person to be around. Francis and Stella Incapola. Francis and Stella have two kids. They're a wonderful couple. They love to ask questions about the Bible. Reason being is their families are extensive Catholics. Both of them have several brothers and sisters that are Catholic priests or nuns. And so they're continually getting pressured about their faith. They've been in the church about 10 years, and they love to discuss the Bible. They love to understand, ask questions. When I arrived there last Sabbath, when I was talking to Francis, after church he came up to me and he has his Bible and he shows me Exodus 35 and he says, it says here, don't light a fire on the Sabbath. And then he flips over to Hebrews 13 and he says, it says here, Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Please explain. And so you have to be ready to talk the Bible with him. And so we had a nice discussion on that. And he's not controversial. He just wants to know people, make sure they know their Bible, and tells everybody, we need to be studying our Bibles. We need to know what God's Word really says. Chifundo and Kedi Najua. Chifundo is a young man I've known for about 10 years, and he's been attending church since his youth. And him and Kedi got married a few years ago. They live about 4 hours away from the Longway congregation. He had to move because of his job, and so they can only make it about one week a month. But Chifundo is the youth leader for the church. This guy has more energy than anybody I've ever seen in my life. But everybody loves it. He drives the youth hard, and they love it, absolutely love it. Chifundo did have a near meeting with death on Tuesday morning. We were where our booth was located. The next booth over was the teens, and some tents right next to them with the teens. And so at 5 a.m., let me repeat this, at 5 a.m., Chifundo is outside their booth, which is 2 feet from our booth, going, let's go, let's go, let's go, time to jog, time to jog, time to jog, let's go, let's go. And he did that for 10 minutes till every teen got out of his tent, out of his booth, and went for a run. They absolutely love it. He pushes them and pushes them, and they respond. Frazier and Jesse Nulubwe, they're a lovely couple. Jesse is the sister to Cathus, the man I talked about who became the medical doctor that passed up being the chief of his village. When he passed up being the chief, it went to Jesse, and Jesse is the chief of their village. They've been around for a long time and are a wonderful couple. Juliana and Chimwemwe are two young women I've known for about 10 years or more. And these two could both use your prayers. They could use all of our prayers. I won't go into specific details. I'll be happy to share their stories with them. But they both are facing some struggles in their lives, and I'll ask that you remember them. You're not going to meet two nicer young women than these two here. So please, brethren, continue, remember to pray for them. Also at the feast was Toko and Zaire. I didn't get to spend much time with them. These are the two young ladies that came over from Zambia. They had an interesting start to the feast. They're sisters, and they get to the Zambia-Malawian border. And as they're crossing the border, they go to change their money, and they got robbed there on Sunday as they were heading to the feast. And they lost about half of their money that they had saved up for the feast. They were pretty shaken up and had gone to the police, which is a complete waste of time. They went to the police and were talking to the police and contacted Brennan and Mikla Hilgen. So Brennan and Mikla drove out to pick them up to bring them the rest of the way to the feast. And after they picked them up, they were coming back to the feast site. And I've already shared this with Greg and Randy, so I don't want to shock her because they're fine. But as they were coming back from the feast site, Brennan and Mikla and Toko and Zaire, by this time it was dark, and the roads out there, there's no street lights, it's pitch dark, and this part of the country, it's not the safest part of the country. Well, as they were driving back to the feast site Sunday night, they saw a person laying in the middle of the road that had been hit. And so they had you immediately come up on him, so they went around him, and it was a person had a woman's wrap on, and they turned around and came back, and as they drove back to him, Brennan noticed that there was a man, and he was looking at him right in the eye and realized something wasn't right. He figured maybe he was drunk. And so they turned back around, and then as they got up close to the guy started yelling, and 12 guys jumped out of the bush and tried to jump and stop the van. And they'd got out of there just in time before the van was stopped and then proceeded back to the feast site. and arrived at the feast site 10 minutes later. All four were visibly shaken and nervous, but otherwise unharmed. Brennan and Mikla Hiljan, most of you are familiar with them. They're not Malawian, they're not Zambian. There's not a member out there that will convince you that they're not. They have been adopted into their families and are considered 100% Malawian, if you ask anyone out there. Hayton, Kafis, and Brennan are the three men that are running the feast site out there in Ninkwazi this year. Some other faces I wanted to show you. There's children everywhere. I actually have a drawing here. The girl that has the Rubik's Cube, I actually was able to show her how to do one side. That was the extent of my Rubik's Cube knowledge, was to do one side. So we spent a couple hours teaching her how to do one side. And she was so excited about it, she actually drew me a little picture as a feast gift. And so I'm going to leave this up here. But that was Rachel Chapamva who drew that. Malawians are known as the warm heart of Africa, and you can see why. But before I left the feast site, I had two members come up to me individually, and both of them expressed basically the same thing. And their comment was, this is the first time in their lives that God had provided them a feast, Malawian style, one they felt like was their feast with God. They said, this is fantastic. We have a place to come out here. They didn't miss the nice hotel rooms, the conference rooms, the air-conditioned buildings they've had in the past. What they said was, this is our time with God, and he's truly blessed us with what we have here. Well, brethren, throughout the feast here, we've heard festival greetings from around the world. And so with that, now they've introduced you to the brethren there in Malawi, I would like to read the feast greetings from our brothers and sisters celebrating the feast in Ninkwazi, Malawi. It says, greetings from both Zambian and Malawian brethren here at the feast site in Ninkwazi, Malawi. We've settled into our brand new Malawian feast site with over 50 brethren. The days have been hot, but have not stopped us from playing netball and soccer for hours on end. We are settling down tonight in our booths, thinking of brethren all over the world who have chosen to keep God's feast. Love you all. Have a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. From Brennan and Mikla Hiljan and the congregation in Malawi. Well, just yesterday, I received a message from Mikla, and this was too good not to include in this message today. And she sent me a note regarding their talent show during the feast. In Malawi, everyone is expected to participate in the talent show. And so it becomes a very eclectic event. Here's what Mikla says about the Malawian talent show they had during the feast this year. Malawian talent shows are amazing experiences. This year it started off with 2 minutes of dancing by the Chapambas and Brennan and myself, and in parentheses, we didn't volunteer. Then we saw a couple dances, listened to a song, heard an informative speech about cholera. This is a talent show, right? So we had an informative speech about cholera. We watched an impersonation of a Chinese guy buying a cow. A couple more dances. A 30-minute long interview where two people were asked to tell their stories, how they entered the church, and then sing their favorite hymn from heart. A stick-finding magician's act. A presentation on the history of Braille. Then an acrobatics act. It was an amazing night. Sounded absolutely amazing and even educational. Well, brethren, when we read what the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 12 about unity and diversity in one body, I hope this gives us a fuller understanding of what God is doing and why this passage was recorded for us. But towards the latter end of that passage, let's remember Paul's words in verse 26. And if one member suffers, all members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. While the members at Malawi have been celebrating, have been rejoicing, have been absolutely loving this feast, there are some that are suffering, and they bear all the weight of that. Just prior to the Feast of Trumpets, one of the members of the Lilongwe congregation, Mrs. Guza, was hit by a bus. After services last Saturday, we had an opportunity to go visit and pray for Mrs. Guza in the hospital. And what I witnessed, I've been to Malawi many times in the past, and what I witnessed in this hospital was something I wasn't ready for. It was the most horrific setting you could imagine. She's in the Kemazu Central Hospital, which is a quote-unquote free government hospital there in Malawi, and it's absolutely deplorable conditions. When you walk into the hospital, the first thing you do is you walk through the morgue. It smells like death. You go through the morgue before you get to the patient wing where the patients are laying, and there's people laying everywhere. As you can see, two of these pictures I took and one I pulled from the internet about the hospital, but there is literally people laying there everywhere, out in the balconies, in the hallways. Mrs. Guza was in a room, and we went into her room, and it's a standard size hospital room that you would see here in the U.S., with the exception of they had 8 beds in there with maybe 2 feet between each bed. And so we walked up to see Mrs. Guza, and she was laying there on sheets that looked like they needed to be burned, a blanket that was just horrendous, and it was absolutely deplorable conditions. And so we gathered around Mrs. Guza, and she couldn't hardly even talk. She had kind of an oxygen thing sticking out of her nose. Don't even know if it was connected up, and was sitting there. She's suffered quite a few broken bones and a lot of internal injuries. I'm not quite sure exactly what's going on at this point. So we gathered around, and we prayed for Mrs. Guza right there in the hospital. When we got done, you should have seen the smile on her face. She had an ear-to-ear smile that I've never seen before. In this hospital, even though it's a free hospital, if you don't tip the doctors or the nurses, you get no service. Brethren, as we close this last service here, I'd like to ask you something. What do our brothers and sisters in Malawi need? What do our brothers and sisters in Zambia need? What does this part of God's body need right now? What do they need today? And how can we help? Our brethren in Malawi and Zambia, they need one thing. And what is that thing? What is that one thing that they need? They need one thing, and that's a new situation. Plain and simple, a new situation. Thankfully, God is providing that for us. We've been celebrating this for the past 7 days, the time when Jesus Christ will reign on earth. So let's pray more fervently, let's pray more urgently for the return of Jesus Christ. Let's pray that thy kingdom come.